Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
I'd like to say happy birthday, Philomena. I know it's you'll be 70 in August, but it's not going to be a happy birthday in one sense. And why is that, Philomena?
Hi, Joe. Nice to speak to you.
Likewise.
I got a job last January, 12 months, as a school warden. And I obviously filled in my age and draw attention to it. Mm-hmm. But now I've been told that when I hit 70, I have to stop working. I have to retire. Now, I'm fit and capable.
Okay.
And I don't see why, but seemingly this is the rule.
And when you say school warden, it's the old, well, there's men do it as well. But we used to call, well, I see you refer to it yourself, as a lollipop lady. But you love the job.
I absolutely love it. Joe, there's a bit of background behind it. 3 years ago, I lost my husband. Over the funeral and whatever, you keep going. But then all of a sudden, you're on your own. Now, the great family.
Yeah,
they all have to do their own thing.
Yeah.
So you go in, you close the door, and you have the television and the radio for company, and you can't talk to them, and they certainly won't answer you back.
Yeah. So how did you come across the job as a school warden, and how did you get it?
I seen it advertised.
Great.
And I applied for it. I got the interview. I done the interview in the morning, and I had the job in the afternoon.
Wow. So you did a great interview, Philomena.
I think so.
And what do you think the interviewees, or the interviewers, what do you think they saw in you? You obviously love people.
I love people. I love children.
Yeah.
Absolutely love children. I like the outdoors.
Great.
I'm fit and healthy.
Yeah.
And I was willing to do it. It's not...
And they saw, but it is a responsible job. And they also saw, obviously, not only were you fit and healthy and enthusiastic, but you're also full of common sense, obviously.
Obviously. I drive, so I'm well roadworthy.
Okay.
I've reared 4 children and I have 8 grandchildren, so I know how children react.
And from your first day as the school warden, the lollipop lady, did you love it from the get-go, Philomena?
Totally. Absolutely okay. Loved it.
And what
the idea of being able to say good morning to somebody every morning and the answer is, it's wonderful. And children are so receptive and outgoing.
And they get to know you and you get to know them and their parents.
Oh, they do. They do. I have little stories every day.
Go away.
Back and forward, good day, bad day, whatever.
And what do they call you, Philomena?
Some call me Philomena, some call me Phil.
Okay.
And I get lollipop babies.
Yeah, of course. And is it a busy road? Well, every road is busy these days. Because it is a very responsible job.
It is a very, very busy road, Joe.
Is it? Wow.
There's 600 in school I look after.
Wow.
There's 2 creches beside me and there's a community school.
That is
so
incredible.
It's busy.
So you start at what time, Philomena?
I start at 8:25.
And what time do you manage to finish at in your fourth shift?
I finish about 9:05, depending.
Yeah. It's non-stop. Better. It's non-stop.
Non-stop.
And at this day and age, unfortunately, I hope it hasn't happened to you, some of the cars, I know, thank God, there's been no injuries, but some of the cars are very anxious to non-stop as well, just to keep going because they're in a hurry to get to work. Do they all observe? I know you're well decked out with high vis and the stick, but do they all observe the lollipop lady?
I would say 95%. There is the few that just drive on through, but that's my job to make sure the children don't move till I know they're stopped.
Okay, well said. And then what, your afternoon shift?
I'm back on then at 1:25.
Okay.
And I stay till about 10 to 2.
Okay.
Making sure I have all them that are coming out on the 1:30.
Yeah, great.
And then I'm back in at 2:25 and I'm there till 3-ish.
Okay. And as you say, this routine gave you your life back in one sense after your husband's passing. Now, when were you told that your birthday was your last day in this job you love and you're so good at, this job you love at so much?
I come back off my holidays at Easter there. I come back on the Saturday night and the post was waiting for me there.
Ah.
Yeah, so that was my happy Easter.
And were you expecting it?
No, not really. I've heard other school wardens leaving at 70, but they've been in the job a long time and they would have a pension amounted. And I assume they're going with their pension. Now, I work and I get paid, which is fine.
Yeah.
I pay the pension, but I'm not part of the pension scheme as such.
Yeah.
I pay my contributions to tax, you know.
Of course, yeah.
And I enjoy it. And for the community as well as everything else.
Of course, and for safety. Nothing more important. But Philomena, were you told at the interview, now Philomena, if you get this job, remember you'll have to retire at 70?
No.
Okay.
No.
Because Wexford County Council, I think it's Gorey you're based in, isn't it? Which is a busy, busy, busy spot. Wexford County Council say we have no hand actor part in this. It is national policy that all public servants must retire at 70. Cannot go on beyond 70. This was increased from 65-66 around 2018. And it covers all public servants who commence on or after the 1st of January 2013, which is you. It is not Wexford County Council policy. It is national policy.
Yeah, and Joe, I accept, you know, that they're saying that, but they got it so hard to fill this position. It was vacant so long. And nobody wants to take the position up. But it suits me.
Yeah, and you're well able, obviously.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah, well, you sound it. Well, no one has said to you, listen, Philomena, we have to give you a medical or anything. It's obvious you're well able.
I've done a medical at the start.
Okay.
I had Garda vetting. I had training.
Okay.
I've done a training course last year for manual handling, which is
brilliant.
Yeah. Like, I've done anything that they've asked of me, and I would be willing to do a medical to stay on. You know, I don't think...
Well, Wexford County Council say, these are my words, you can do handstands, backflips, trapeze artists, but if you're a public servant, the state has decided you have to retire at 70.
Yep.
And we had that situation with the school bus drivers. They could drive, and a lot of them are more than able, but they were told they couldn't drive a school bus beyond 70, yet they could go and drive a commercial bus. What are you going to do, Philomena? You sound as if you have a great energy in you with the manual handling course and doing different things. Could you see yourself working at something else, Philomena, where age wasn't this artificial barrier?
Oh, well, definitely, Joe. I'm not ready to go in and sit in a corner and wait for whatever's going to happen. I always had a good social life.
Yeah,
I had my husband at my side. We were together over 50 years.
Right.
We'd done everything together. He was my best friend.
Brilliant.
So I need something to keep me occupied. For my headspace will go. You know, and there's plenty of people like me, ready and willing to work. And you're written off because you hit a number. I don't call it old age. I just call it a number.
Yeah, of course it's a number. Thankfully, we're all living in the main, all living much longer. Linda O'Leary, Linda is your daughter, Linda.
Hi, Joe.
It's obvious your mother is very upset about this.
Of course she is. And she says it means so much to her. It gives her a reason to get up in the morning.
Yeah.
It gets her out to interact with people. She helps within the community on a daily basis. She's met so many friends. And as she says herself, the little handmade cards from the children and the little gestures just make her day.
Yeah. And she's very, obviously, she's on top of her job. And it is a difficult job, especially at a busy school. And a busy town like Gorey, but as you said, she's a 600 plus a community school, plus two creches, plus the parents, obviously, or the minders or the guardians or whatever coming along with the children. That is a hell of a responsibility. And she's obviously well able for it. And Philomena, do your children, so to speak, that you look after every morning and every afternoon, do they know you're effectively, when this school term finishes, that you're gone?
They do. I'll give you, for instance, Joe, the head teacher came out to me here before I started at 1:30. And they had, do you know Junk Couture?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Where they make the costumes.
Yes.
And she came out to show me a photograph where one of the children had made a fan with the picture of me on the paper, and underneath was save, I can't remember the exact words, but save my job.
Okay.
You know, which is unreal for a child to do. You're talking now primary school.
Yeah. They're so sensitive. You know? And do you know any other school wardens, Philomena?
I don't know. I did meet them. I met one in when I went for training, but that was from a different town.
Okay. And what does your training consist of? Do you, for example, do you have any powers? I know you stand out on the road and people are supposed to obey you. But if a car doesn't obey you, can you take the reg number and report it to the Gardaí?
I certainly can.
Okay.
And the Gardaí will follow up on it. I have, when I'm on that crossing, I am the law. Only on that crossing now.
Brilliant.
As far as the drivers are concerned.
Okay. So there's no ifs or buts. When the school warden... And as we know, man, there's lots of men doing it as well, and they're brilliant. But as a lot, when the lollipop lady stands out on that road, you own that road.
I own that section.
On behalf of the state, yeah. You are in control of that section of road.
Yeah.
Okay. And what else did your training consist of? Was part of it how to deal with difficult motorists or scooters or cyclists or whatever?
Yeah, and how to deal with children.
Yeah, okay.
That to me is natural. Like I've rare children, I've always had interaction with children. And children are very open. If you're open with children, they're open back, and they'll do, you know. And I will say one thing, the lollipop is like a magnet to children.
I see, okay. And I don't know, well, I know Gorey so well, but there's so many, I can't hold me to this, but I thought supermarkets generally, Petits and Tesco's and Lidl and Aldi and all the different shops, nationally, were making an effort to realise the skills and experience and wisdom that older people, so to speak, bring to the job. But the state doesn't recognise it, unfortunately, here, because I don't think I've ever read a clearer statement from a county council. They say it's not us, it's the retirement age. Is your birthday, that's age 70, and that's the law.
Yeah, but there was a law introduced, Joe, in 2018.
Yeah, when they upped it.
I haven't gone into it. I only found it last night. And it says there is a discretionary power there.
Oh, is there? Okay. Well, Wexford County Council are saying that there's a national policy. We might bring that to their attention. Ask them. I'm sure they're doing their absolute best as well. And I'm sure they appreciate you. So if this proceeds, which unfortunately looks like the way it is, that August, when you hit 70, when will your last day with the children be? Or does it vary between primary school and second level?
Yeah, it'll be the 27th of June.
Ah.
Yeah, that'll be my last day.
Same as myself.
Yeah.
It's 27th
of June. You're the same age as me, Joe.
Okay, yes.
And, you're looking for the fire, and I did look for that with my husband.
Yeah.
But circumstances change, and that's why I felt this was suiting me.
4 weeks from today.
Yeah.
Okay, you sound as if you're a tonic and a guide and a joy for those children to meet every morning, Philomena, and in the afternoon. Now, I know I have to let you go in a few minutes because you're back out on the road. Marion O'Neill is in Killiney. Marion.
Hi, good afternoon to you, Joe.
You're a school warden as well.
I'm a school warden based up in Sandyford. I'm 71 in 2 weeks.
Ah.
I had a medical when I was 70. The same story as the other one when my husband was dying. I had retired and the lollipopping kept me going. But I don't know. I mean, if you're physically fit, I had the medical when I turned 70. And I'll have another medical now when I'm, in 2 weeks, I'm 71. So I don't see where the...
And Marion, who was your employer?
Dunleary Rathdown County Council.
So they're able to say there is a discretion. We put that to Wexford.
I'm still working.
And when, but did you get a letter initially saying, Marion, on your 70th birthday, it's bye-bye?
No, I was just told when you turn 70, you do a medical.
Okay.
Oh.
And Philomena obviously wasn't told that.
No.
And as I told your researcher, I worked, I did relief when my husband was ill, I did relief for 18 months. And I've worked with lollipop wardens that are a hell of a lot older than 71.
Yeah, and brilliant.
And
brilliant as well, yeah.
Yeah.
And what...
It keeps
you in touch with the community. But Marion, sorry, if you don't mind me asking, what did the medical consist of?
Oh, you have to do a balance of your ears, your eyes, balance, a general medical.
Yeah, okay. So your hearing, your eyesight, and what does a balance test consist of?
A balance, you have to be able to balance on one, like lift a foot up, balance on one leg.
Okay.
So, you have to be... if you're fit and your brain is there, and you can see... And the kids love all the lollipops.
And you love, as in your case as well, I hear, I hear from your voice. And if Philomena, can you stand on one leg for a few seconds?
I certainly can.
Okay, brilliant.
She's a fit lady.
Where are you now? Where are you now, Philomena?
I'm sitting in my car waiting to back out.
But you say you have to run around to the school. But you say you'll have no problem standing on one leg for whatever the test is.
That's
a fascinating insight from Marion, saying that she's 71 and she knows older people who do the job. Once you do the medical at 70, I can't see you from here, Philomena, but I suspect Linda, you know your mother. Do you think she'd be able to?
We would be able
to get her to stand on one leg for a few seconds.
Oh, definitely.
One foot.
Definitely.
Okay. Okay,
Joe, I have to go because I know.
Philomena O'Leary, good to meet Linda O'Leary. Thanks indeed. Marion, are you on duty today?
I'm on duty now. I'd have to.
Okay.
I'm just heading up onto the M50.
Well done, Marion. Safe travelling. Sean Marr is in Kilkenny. Sean, you're a school warden. You're a lollipop man. Are you over 70? Are you over 70?
I am, Joe. I'm grateful for coming in on this discussion because I feel very strong on it. I'm not a lollipop man or anything like that. I'm still working. I'm doing work in Mount Julius Country Club Estate in Thomastown here.
Yeah.
As a historian and basically as a storyteller to the people, to tours that people that come as guests and golfers and all of that, but I'm very, very strong on this, and I've written to some of the local politicians in relation to this. 70 is not a barrier anymore. Thanks be to God for medicine and for health as well. You wouldn't be able to do it if you hadn't health. But I fully support that lady and all other ladies and gentlemen that are out there that want to work, because basically a pension, an old age contributory pension, is not sufficient to live on by any means. The social justice organisation are very, very strong, but they're not making much progress, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But the trade unions should be in on it as well, because they have done remarkable work in the public service up to 70, but they should. Put some kind of a clause in that if you're capable of doing the job.
I'm sure they'd fight. They're fighting for it, but it's the employer that has the power in this scenario. Sean, what age were you when you started working?
I was 16 and a half.
Okay. So you're working nearly 60 years.
I'm working 57 years this year, yeah.
Well done. and you tell stories and you do the history of Mount. I think I've heard about you. You're very, very good, because it's a beautiful estate by all accounts and a beautiful restaurant by all accounts in Mount Julia. Onwards, Sean, and well done. If we hear more people, as we say now, we have a couple of examples of people over 70 who are still school wardens. Sean Marn, Kilkenny, Linda O'Leary, and your fantastic mother, Philomena, young in age and young at heart and skilled with great ability. Joe with RT.ie, 51551 is the text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe at RT.ie, 51551. All the summer concerts are starting, but this is a concert that's for next year. And it's I thought they were gone, but they're not gone. They're still going strong. Metallica, Danielle Meehan. Danielle, did you get tickets?
I did indeed, Joe. Yeah, I got them there this morning.
And how much are they?
Delighted.
How much are they?
So it was €220 each, but that's for two nights. So they're playing two nights altogether.
And you go to both nights?
Oh, 100%, yeah. Yeah, okay. They're playing two different sets. They're playing two different sets. So there'll be no two songs played on both nights.
Wow. And when, can you, I was asking Sean there, can you remember when he started work and it was 57 years ago? I don't want the exact details. Can you remember when you first got into Metallica?
I can, yeah. I was about 8 or 9, Joe. My dad just got into them at the time, and he had a few CDs laying around the place. And I just picked up and threw them on, and sure, it was like nothing I'd ever heard before. I'd be listening to like Britney Spears and SF7, and then you're listening to this and you're wondering, what's this? It's completely, completely different, a complete different energy, you know?
And a completely different sound. Heavy. Absolutely. Electric sound, heavy. And does anyone ever say to you, Danielle, what do you love about heavy metal?
I suppose I do get asked that quite a lot, but I suppose it's a taste, really, isn't it? Everybody's got a different taste in music, everybody's got a different taste in films. But heavy metal, there's an energy about it. There's a connection to the people playing on stage, the lyrics. It just resonates with me, you know?
But other people say, well, they say this about a lot of music, but that heavy metal and Metallica, there's a general, well, of course, it's an identifiable sound, otherwise it wouldn't be so popular. But is there a similarity among the songs?
No, I wouldn't say so. Like, they've, particularly with Metallica, they've got such a diverse catalogue. Like, if you listen to a song off of their first album, Kill 'Em All, and you listen off to a song off of Load or Reload, they sound completely different.
Okay.
Now, every iteration of Metallica, like, wouldn't be loved by everybody, but you can't fault them for trying something new with all of their stuff, you know?
And they've been on the go since 1981. So
yeah,
they've been on the go for, what, 46 years nearly. Brian Stacey, well, you too as well, are coming up to the 50th and they're still brilliant. Brian Stacey, Brian is in Enniscorthy. You're a Metallica fan. Well, there's no such thing as a Metallica fan. You have to be a huge Metallica fan. But you say 271, is it 271 per ticket?
Yeah, well, that's all I was finding. I've had a little bit of a term recently trying to get tickets to this gig, and the price was only really one factor with it. I've kind of been at odds with Ticketmaster all morning, really, to be honest.
Over what?
Well, I suppose really just trying to get tickets in the first place. I mean, I tried getting tickets through the Metallica pre-sale, and Metallica made a mess of it, and then MCD, I finally got the code, and there was nothing left. And then this morning, Ticketmaster pretty much just wouldn't let me buy anything.
But is that not just supply and demand?
Well, I think that's absolutely fair, but I suppose with my end with Ticketmaster today, even regardless of price, was I kept trying to join the queue. It kept kicking me out. Whenever I would get in, it wouldn't accept, say, gift cards or payments. It was very hard to justify in my own head the €271 price for the tickets that were left. Ultimately, I kind of was like, I can't really buy them, but then I was like, I don't want to miss out. But even when I decided to buy them, I was just stymied by so many roadblocks. Not even a supply and demand issue, just Ticketmaster.
Okay,
just,
whatever was
again,
the glitch.
Ticketmaster style, just letting down the site completely.
And Brian, is this their farewell tour?
I mean, they're not advertising it as that, but I think, okay, you know, I mean, they're all in their 60s. I mean, I know a lot of people have been given out that the nights aren't concurrent, but I don't think they've done a concurrent gig like night after night in a couple of years.
They have to take a break. Like, they have to get the comp.
Yeah, I mean,
they have to have an early night with comp plan and maybe drinking chocolate, heavy metal.
Well, look, I mean, it doesn't really matter, I suppose, what genre you're into. Everybody likes an early night, you know what I mean? So, in fairness, you know.
Yeah, okay. Brian, let me go to Bosco. Bosco in Newtown, Mount Kennedy. Bosco, good afternoon.
Are you going? Oh, yeah, I'm indeed, yeah.
Okay, we'll explain to people that there's obviously a frenzy now why people love Metallica and have done since 1981 in the last century.
I know, yeah. They're just one of those bands that just a lot of people are into, I suppose, from the early days, and they just obviously got bigger over the years, you know.
And have you seen them before?
Yeah, I've seen them plenty of times before, yeah.
And what type of show? They do a big, big sound, don't they?
Oh, well, this is a mess. I've been to this Now Repeat weekend down the last couple of years, you know. I went away to it. So I was in Madrid last year, New York the year before.
Okay.
So it's a great setup. This particular tour is a great setup because it's in the round and that, you know. So it's the whole thing is just set up really well.
And you remember the first time you saw them?
I do. First time was in the Top Hat in O'Leary, 1988.
Good God.
So I've only missed them once.
Wow.
That they played here. And that was 1986. So it was before we actually started going to gigs.
Now, there was a phrase when we were growing up, and take this in good stead. I know you will, Bosco. You, by the way, you weren't christened Bosco, were you? I know you
I
can
wasn't,
be.
No.
It's Bosco.
No,
yeah,
no.
Anyway, how'd you get the name Bosco, by the way?
Well, my father's called Bosco as well.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's my point is, we used to call heavy metalers headbangers because of the way they moved their head around.
Yeah, well, this is it, yeah.
And how were you on the old headbanging, Bosco?
Well, I suppose you have to deal with it when in my younger days, yeah.
Yes,
but as you go on, then you have to sort of ease off a bit, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And are all their concerts equally, they never let you down, full of adrenaline?
Oh, yeah. Well, look at all, you haven't seen a bad Metallica show anyway.
Wow.
You know what I mean? It's
And by the way, did you get tickets? Did you manage to get tickets?
I did. Well, I got through the fan club pre-sale there on Tuesday.
Oh, okay. And you mind me asking how much you paid?
It came to, I think it was 221 something. That was for standing, you know, for both nights.
And that's in the, where are they on? The Aviva, is it?
That's the Aviva, yeah.
Okay.
But a lot of people did have, even on Tuesday,
yeah.
And it wasn't just in Ireland. It was in Germany and Poland and everything through Ticketmaster, and a lot of them did have trouble trying to get tickets, you know.
Well, do you know, who do you think is the world's greatest guitarist, Bosco, alive or dead?
You couldn't pick one, Joe, really, to be honest with you. There's too many good ones out there to just narrow it down to one.
And we've had a good few here, it says, including Rory Gallagher, as you know, and the Rory Gallagher Festival in Ballyshannon, where he was born. I know he was reared in Cork. The Rory Gallagher Festival is on this weekend. And he was born, appropriately enough, in the Rock Hospital in Ballyshannon in 1948. And again, I know the event that pal of mine, Julian Vignoles, goes up to it every year. And the tribute bands and the solo artists are just incredible. It's supposed to be a brilliant, brilliant festival,
yeah,
by all accounts,
with a great show.
With a magic atmosphere. Where's Letty? Joe at rt.ie, 51551. Letty, what age were you when you got into Metallica?
I was 13.
Okay. And do you remember when you went to see their first concert?
Yes, it was for my 17th birthday at Slane in 2019.
Okay. And good gig?
Oh, it was very good. I caught the drummer Lars's drumstick, so happy out.
Oh, you caught one of Lars' drumsticks. Well, he's one of the founding members, as you know. And when the stick came through the air,
yeah.
When you grabbed it, surely there was a melee to get the drumstick.
Oh, there was, but my mum was behind me, so she caught it for me and just stuffed it into her coat and was like, no.
Because I know You know Morrissey, but he's on tomorrow night, isn't he, in the Three Arena here in Dublin. When he's in Vicar Street, you know Morrissey at the end of every show. I don't know if Morrissey is too mainstream for you, Letty. But Morrissey, he's right from Crum in Dublin, Stephen Patrick Morrissey. But when Morrissey finishes every show, he takes off his sweat-sodden shirt.
Yeah.
And he throws it into the audience, which creates a melee. And Fran and the lads in Vicar Street, who I know, there's a great security staff, they have to be waiting for the throw of Morrissey's shirt, and they have to be waiting with his scissors. So they cut up, they cut like the relics of Padre Pio. They cut up Morrissey's shirt into as many small pieces as they can, so everyone gets a bit of it. But you have a Metallica drumstick.
I do, and I have a pick.
Okay. And what's your favourite album?
Saint Anger.
Okay. Now we have a song. It's called Master of Puppets. Can we give it a blast, just so people who don't know Metallica, they've heard the name, they probably recognise their logo, a very distinctive logo. This is Metallica, Master of Puppets. Here they come with rip roaring sound, rip roaring electric sound. Letty. That's called Master of Puppets. Letty.
It is. It was used in Stranger Things in their most recent season.
Okay. And it is a very distinctive song. What's your favourite song, I'm told, is Saint Anger. Is that not the name of the album?
My favourite album is Saint Anger. My favourite song of all time by Metallica is Disposable Heroes.
And just for people... like myself, I couldn't make out the lyrics of Master of Puppets. They were as follows. End of passion play, crumbling away. I'm your source of self-destruction. Veins that pump with fear, sucking dark, it's clear. Leading on your death's construction. Taste me, you will see. More is all you need. Dedicated. How I'm come crawling faster. Obey your master. It's not exactly Seamus Heaney, is it?
It was, it's about... cocaine addiction, apparently.
Okay, yeah, okay. Well, let's. You're right. Master of Puppets. I'm pulling your strings. This is the addiction to cocaine. Needlework is the way. Never you betray. Life or death becoming clear. A pain monopoly, ritual misery, that chop your breakfast on a mirror. So they're saying, cocaine addiction and cocaine is misery. Misery, misery. Is Saint Anger there? He is there. He is there. There you are, very, very distinctive sound. Now, they're not coming till next year, Letty.
Yes, they're. Okay. It's a long way in advance.
Okay. And I don't know what that will last, Ticketmaster. I know it's always supply and demand and fairness, and every system can only take so much. So I'm sure Ticketmaster are doing their absolute best, as always, to try and get everyone sorted. Apparently, Letty and Bosco, there's only VIP ticket packages left.
Yeah, I got the €900 general admission one for the Frantic package on Tuesday. But that's for two people for two nights.
Okay. Well, enjoy. Force of Summer, and I know Arndt and Hale are playing this weekend. Great band. Lots of concerts starting on this June bank holiday weekend. Bosco, Martin Wise, Letty, and the other Metallica fans. I can't call you a headbanger. Sure, I can't, Bosco.
No, you can if you want.
Okay, yeah, your words, not mine.
Plenty of us around anyway.
Your words, not mine.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at rt.ie. My next interview is a very difficult listen, especially for younger ears, but it is important. Descriptions of loss of life arising from the airstrikes in Gaza. Earlier I spoke to Bouchra. She left Gaza to get treatment for her son Mohammed here in Ireland after the family was bombed. And I first asked her to take me back to the day that changed her life.
We were at Khan Yunis. We displaced to Khan Yunis after around six times. And we settled at Khan Yunis. They told us that it is a green area and it is a safety area. Mm-hmm. So we bombed at a tent on Khan Yunis, unfortunately.
And all the family were together when the attack happened?
Yes.
Tell us what happened.
Oh, I speak to you not just as someone concerned about Gaza, but as a parent, as a mother, who is really trying to bring my three children to safety. After we displaced from Al Zahra city, we went to Khan Yunis.
Yeah.
We settled at a tent. And on July 23 was the blackest day of my life. Okay. Our tent was bombed. We were all injured. I tried to gasp for breath, struggled to stand, and I looked around and saw my husband on the ground. Yeah. And my youngest son beside him. Mm-hmm. All was blooded and silent. In this moment, I faced an impossible choice. Who do I save first?
Yeah.
My son's leg had fallen from my arms. He slipped into unconsciousness, blood pouring from his small body. I screamed, I begged my neighbor to help me. He finally agreed to help me and he bedailed away towards to the hospital, a journey of 2 hours.
So you begged your neighbor to help, and how did you get to the hospital with Mohammed?
By bicycle. Yes, a journey of 2 hours.
Yeah.
While I remained wounded, they searching for strength, and I didn't know I had. I returned to my husband, still alive, but barely. Okay. I told him everyone was okay, even though my heart was breaking. I needed him to stay strong.
Yeah.
Suddenly, a water truck appeared. I threw myself in front of it, pleading with the driver to help me. The two of us carried my husband into the vehicle, and off they went. Then I turned back.
Okay.
The ground was soaked with blood. Two other bodies lay nearby. One of them is a child without a head, and other is just torn open. I tried to rescue them, but they were already gone. A donkey cart arrived, and we placed the bodies inside. I found my daughter pleading and in pain. I carried her in my arms, walking all the way to the hospital. I left her at emergency entrance and ran inside searching for my son and husband. They told me that my son was in surgery. I took a breath and I asked for my husband. Suddenly they told me that he was murdered.
Ahmed was dead. Your husband was dead. Was dead.
Yes. The word shattered to me. There is no words of that moment. I went silent for 40 days. I didn't speak a word. I buried my husband and a piece of my son, his leg. I stayed at hospital for 4 months, alone, far from my other children, and no visitors, no support. Eventually, I turned to attend. I hate every breath inside, but what choice did I have?
You had to stay. You obviously had to stay in the hospital with Mohammed, who had lost his leg in that bombing. And when you were released, when Mohammed was released from the hospital in Gaza, where did you go next? Where could you go?
To attend. Yeah. Yes, I had every breath inside it, but what choice did I have? Yeah. I came a clamor. Oh, my son was approved for medical treatment abroad.
Oh, okay.
His other leg and had nerve damage. He couldn't walk, he couldn't play, he couldn't be an energetic child had. Yeah. He once was, but I forced to choose. Only one child could travel and the others had to stay behind.
Okay. And that's your daughter, your two daughters and your son and Mohammed. So when you were told there was treatment available abroad, where did you go?
We went to Egypt.
Okay.
for 3 months,
right,
until we traveled to Ireland.
Okay. And who organized for you to come to Ireland, Boutra?
WHO and Red Cross. Brilliant. By the way, let me have this chance. I would like to take this opportunity to extend my deepest and appreciation for the incredible and noble role played by the Red Cross in Ireland. Yeah. They granted me a golden opportunity to have my children treated here, something I could never have achieved by my own. I am also deeply thankful to the Great Irish Society, to the country of Ireland, from the bottom of my heart, and for the Ministry of Health, who went to great lengths to bring me here and provide what I was unable to provide for myself. Yeah. Really. At first, I had great fears about difference in culture, environment, and way of life, but I was met with nothing but warmest kindness and compassion far beyond anything I had expected. So thank you from Palestine, from myself, from every mother who dreamed to heal her child. We have lost much and we need your support very much. My home, my car, my job, my husband, my child, and myself also. I don't know how to extend my thanks for all of you.
And Mohammed,
thank you very much.
Since you arrived in December 24, Mohammed has been treated and
I came from in 5th of July, of May.
Okay.
I am the second group.
The second group. So when you arrived in May, you were Mohammed was treated in the children's hospital in Crumlin.
We came at the accommodation at homes, but we took appointments in hospitals.
Okay. So he was And is Mohammed still attending hospital for appointments?
Yeah.
Okay. And your other children who were still in Gaza, who was looking after them, Boutra?
My oldest mom, she's 80 years old. Okay. She can't do anything.
And can you communicate with them, or can you even do a WhatsApp call, or what communication can you have with your children?
I worry about them constantly, every day. I live in fear. I try to call them, but there is a very bad network in Gaza.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yes, the connection is not always reliable. Sometimes we go days without being able to reach each other, which is heartbreaking. Sorry.
And what conditions are your children and your mother living in Gaza?
They were in a tent. They are in a tent now. They make food on fire if there is available. Mm-hmm. There is no flour. There is no bread. There is, as you know, the flour and the bread is the main meal in Gaza as a tradition. They use to eat bread each meal.
Yeah, yeah.
And yes, they are starving now. They are with dirty water. They are in wastewater around them. There is no surfaces. They walked around 41 kilometers without transportation and displacing. They displaced 3 times in 2 days. Yes. As you know, my old mom can't do that.
Yeah, of course. And your 8-year-old daughter, Kenzie, she was injured as well in an airstrike recently. Has she got medical treatment or even pain medication?
No. Sorry. Let me tell you something about the health system in Gaza. It's so bad. There is no abilities in Gaza, and everything is not okay. Hospitals are barely functioning, and there is no access to basic medical care, and the streets are filled with destruction. Children are suffering physically and emotionally.
It is so awful. It really is. How is Mohammed? How is his recovery?
He's now okay, but he needs to heal. He needs to live with his family, especially mm-hmm. his daughters, his sisters and brother. He needs that to heal, really.
Yeah. Now, do you hope that you can get your 3 children out of Gaza and get them to Ireland, Boutra?
I hope so. I am in a need, and I am in a very humanitarian crisis, really. Mm-hmm. I need them, especially Ireland is a great country and it is against separation of families. So please help me in this as can as you. Please.
Yeah. And Boutra, you were saying that you've got, and rightly so, a very compassionate welcome here in Ireland. But does anyone, your attack happened in July 24, but does anyone say to you, well, what about October the 7th, 2023, and the Hamas attack?
I am not a good political.
Okay.
And I am against killing of civilians, let me say. But on the other side, what happened is not normal. And Israel has attacked civilians in multiple war and situation, and they have committed many actions against ordinary people. It's worth nothing that there were trace of war from Israel before what happened on 7th of October. Every action has reaction. 17 years of a blockage, provocation, killing of innocents in the West Bank, dancing in the Al-Aqsa Mosque, closing the crossings, and economic strangulation, raising taxes and arrests. I believe all this pressure led to the explosion that occurred on all of us.
And the Irish government have been very clear, one, in condemning October 7 and calling for the release of the hostages, but also in saying quite clearly and categorically that what's happening in Gaza at the moment is genocide, and that's the words of our Prime Minister and the Deputy Prime Minister. Would your mother be able to come to Ireland? I know you said she's in her 80s. Is there any possibility of getting your whole family to Ireland?
We came in ceasefire, but in these days they can't cross the borders. It is forbidden for all, and no goods can come to Gaza.
Okay. Well, you're in good hands here, but I cannot even get a glimpse of the worry you must have, Boutre, about your mother and your other children, especially as there's so little communication. And your other children are Ghazal, who's 14, your son Zane, who's 12, and Kenzie, who we mentioned earlier, the girl that was injured, she's 8 years of age. I hope you were reunited soon, Boutre, and
I hope so.
Yeah, and we all hope that the killing from every aspect ends quickly. It is a very, very difficult situation.
Yes, I want my children to live in peace, to be safe, and to have access to education and opportunities. I am a father and a mother in the same time.
And I know you wanted to thank the Red Cross, the WHO, the Red Cross in Ireland,
course.
And indeed Crumlin.
Of course, they did a lot for us. Yeah, really. It is a great and a golden opportunity to get a treatment here.
Okay. God rest all the innocent souls that have died. God rest your husband and all the innocent souls that died in this awful, awful conflict. Boutre, thank you so much, and kind regards to Mohammed, especially as he's here with you in Ireland, and hopefully you will be reunited very soon with your full family.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at rt.ie 51551 is the text number. Daryl Kinnaid. Daryl, good afternoon.
How are you getting on?
Good. An emotional day coming up for you soon, Daryl, because of Hanson. Tell us about Hanson.
So Hanson is my guide dog. He's actually now my retired guide dog, and he and I have been together for 8 years now, and I'm currently just qualified with my next guide dog, Quips, which is, it's hard. I won't lie, it's hard, because you're so used to a partnership for, like I said, 8 years, and now, and I, don't get me wrong, love Quips, but we're starting from scratch, so it's a big change. It's a big change.
And you've had Hanson for what? You had him for 8 years.
Wow. Since 2017. Okay. Yeah, 2017. So, eight years.
And when did you first become visually impaired, Dara?
So, I was born with a genetic disease called retinoschisis. Okay. So from the start, I always had, like, low vision, but wasn't always the best. But, do things not always well, I must say that I wasn't able to do things perfectly, but we always knew that I was going to lose my sight, so I was meant to lose it in my mid to late 20s. But unfortunately, when I was 16, I woke up one day and I was gone in one eye, and a few days later I was gone in the other.
It was as identifiable as that. One day you woke up and your vision was gone in one eye completely.
Yeah, just gone. And like that, a few days later, it was, and like I said, we always knew it was going to happen, but we weren't prepared for 16. And like that, 16 for anyone is such a tough age, and everything's going on, and then throw that on top of it. So it was very, very difficult time.
And I presume you didn't expect it to happen so suddenly, Dara.
Oh, no, not at all. And I won't lie, there was a lot of denial, a lot of kind of, sure, it'll be grand, this isn't happening at all. There was a lot of that going on. It's just something, just denial. That's the only way to describe it. It was pure and utter denial, even though it was clearly happening.
Yeah.
But I just didn't want to accept it because it was just such a huge dramatic change.
And how did you cope within the first few years? I mean, what did you have to relearn?
How did I cope? I won't lie, there were some days I didn't cope well at all. It was just like that. You have to go through all the waves. Mm-hmm. Like that, friends and family got me through, humour, kind of trying to look at the bright side. You're kind of like it. To be honest, some days I don't know how I got through, I won't lie, because like I said, 16 is tough. And like that, I had to learn, like, you're the white cane. So obviously, I always said, I always knew I was going to lose my sight, but we weren't expecting that. So that was just thrown on top of me. I had to learn Braille. Now, just the basics, I only had the basics of it, because like that, unless you're learning Braille from a very young age from the start, it's incredibly difficult because your fingertips, as time goes along, they toughen and they harden. So it's much harder to learn later on. So I do have the basics, but like that, there was a lot going on. And then like that, I was going into, like I was 16, it happened in transition year. So then I was going into fifth year, into like starting for the leaving cert. I wasn't, there was a complete life change. So because junior cert, say, went well, leaving cert did not go as well, because it was just, we're talking about learning how to, they were literally learning how to learn completely differently. Like, I was able to use large print books before, I was able to do things on the computer, just read stuff with large print, but now I'd learn completely differently. Just, it was, there was no preparation, there was no way of preparing for it.
And when did you first discover that a guide dog could make such a difference?
I suppose like that, for the fact that I always knew I was going to lose my sight, it was always something I was always kind of kept.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of kept my eye on, once again, pardon the pun. But it was always kind of in my life. I always knew about guide dogs. A few people I knew had guide dogs, so Joe was always there, and I've always been a huge animal person, a big dog person. So I suppose it was always something I was interested in, and like that, I had to wait until I was 18 to kind of start training. At the time, 18 was the age, but I actually moved to Cork for college, so they said, wait until you're 19 so Joe can get your bearings, and so then when I was 19, I started training and got matched with my first guide dog, Patsy. And then Henson came after Patsy, and now Quips. So three dogs. Okay. Yeah.
And did Patsy, because you're still quite young, did Patsy pass early? Did she die young?
Yeah, she had an aggressive... she had an aggressive form of cancer, and then followed by an aggressive neurological disease, which was hidden kind of by the cancer. So the cancer took it out of her, and then that was just it was too late by the time we caught the neurological disease.
Patsy was obviously very young, and then because we know how difficult it can be, and the waiting list for a guide dog, because you have to be very specially trained, and you had to be trained as well. How soon afterwards did you get Hanson?
So that was November 2016, and Hanson and I started training in June 2017, which was I can't even explain to anyone how lucky that was, because at the time the waiting list was, and like still is the wait, like there is a waiting list, as you said, but it was just everyone, like, person and dog are matched one to one, as in they go through all assessments and stuff. So I was lucky that Hanson was just there. It just happened that he was there, and it was luck. I won't lie, there was luck. But at the same time, I was still grieving Patsy unbelievably. And to this day, I still do. Like, it's not like it's not swapping one out for the other. Like, you're not buying a new pair of shoes or anything like that. It is something that lives with you forever.
Yeah.
That those emotions will always be there.
And if you've had a Hanson for 8 years, which is a significant part of your life, I presume he was equally as reliant and as companionable to you as you were to him.
Oh, it's a complete partnership. So people kind of just assume that he's going to just walk out the door and just kind of off you go. But no, it's complete partnership. You have to know where you're going. The dog gets you there safely. But other than that, like, if you're responsible for, like, he's responsible for keeping you alive out and about, and you're responsible for keeping him alive around the house. So, like, it is, it's 24/7, you're minding each other. Like, you're both responsible for each other.
And how did you get on? Was he reliable? Had he any little personality quirks?
His nickname was Hurricane Hanson because he's a live wire. Like, he's full of energy. If he went through your house, he'd destroy it. He's just a ball of energy. But the second he gets out the door, the harness is on. He's at work. He was, he's just switched on. He's like, I know I'm working now. I'm going to behave. He's the best boy.
But Dar, when you initially get the dog, if you don't mind, I presume you have to devote a lot of attention to your new dog, and
you do. It's kind of like they have to know, and they could, even for Quips now. This, I think, I'm his fourth home. He's only 21 months. This is his fourth home between training, and everything. Like, so you have to give him all the attention. You have to let them know that they are a priority to you, that they are number one. You have to let them know that it's all about reinsurance and making sure they're happy.
So, and Hanson went everywhere with you, I see, and he was also well known because you're a journalist. You did a stint with great station Radio Kerry. You were an announcer for Virgin Media during COVID, and you won an IMRO award.
Hanson was there through all of that.
Brilliant.
I think Hanson's probably the most well-known dog in radio.
And where does Hanson go when he retires?
So I'm actually very lucky and very privileged, and I know this because Hanson can stay in the family. He's going to be signed over to my mom.
Ah, brilliant.
So he will still be in the family. But what a lot of people don't realise is that that's not always the case. A lot of guide dog owners would have to find someone. Sometimes it could be a family member, an aunt or an uncle or a cousin. But sometimes guide dogs might have to help find a retirement home, basically, for the dog, like a foster home.
And will Hanson be in the same household as Quips?
Yeah, at the moment now, because I'm back living at home. Okay. So, it's a full house at the moment, I won't lie. There's a lot of hair. I won't lie, there's a lot of grooming. There's a lot of grooming going on. There's a lot of hair going on.
You have to give attention, obviously, to Quips, but you also have to give attention to Hanson. You must be wrecked.
I am. I won't lie. Because I'll be there some days when I'm playing with Quips, and then Henson's like, excuse me, I'm here too. Hello. I'm here. So there is a bit of jealousy going on, but Hanson is, I won't lie, he switched over to his retirement quite quickly. I'm actually quite enjoying this laid back lifestyle. he's really enjoying his pension.
Well, I really hope, and I'm sure it will, because they're so well trained, and the Irish Guide Dog Association, such a fantastic organisation. I really hope it works out well, and I really hope Hanson enjoys his retirement, and I wish you well in your ongoing career, Dara. That's Dara O'Kaneda in Kerry. Back after the sprays. Go to Margaret, Dara.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.